Accession number 28358, Reel 6.
Mrs. Jill McNair, and this is Reel 6 now, Jill. And we're arriving in Japan, aren't we? In Kure, I believe.
Yes.
If you could carry on with the story. I believe you were saying you'd gone up to the hospital.
Yes, we were driven up to the hospital. Actually, to be honest, we were driven up the hill to the mess. It was a women's officers' mess. And the hospital was called the British Commonwealth General Hospital in Kure. The mess was a series of buildings on the hillside. We were taken there first. There was a large mess itself, and two up a little slope, two large separate buildings of sleeping quarters, two-storied buildings. First of all, we went to the anteroom, where we were given coffee. A matron explained the situation and explained that at the moment we were part of the occupation forces in Japan left over from World War II. We were also told about our living arrangements, and Pat and I were thrilled because we were told that we would share a girl-san. She was a Japanese girl to look after us between two of us, and this girl would blissfully do our laundry and look after our rooms, look after us, and when we had a day off, she would bring us breakfast in bed, which was a great luxury. We were also terribly impressed with the coffee at first, because it came in small cups with whipped cream right up to the top of the cups, and I was out on stalks at seeing this, but one of the home sister who was there said, "Don't be too thrilled about this, it's just evaporated milk." And then we lived on evaporated milk for the next 20 months or so, and now I take very little milk in my tea after all those years. The anteroom in the mess was huge, because the mess, there were 80 female mess members, and these were made up of about roughly 33, it varied the number, of QA nursing sisters, British, about 30 Australian nursing sisters, and 10 or 12 Canadian nurses, plus one or two members of the Women's Voluntary Service, as it was then, the Red Cross, and two civilian physiotherapists. In all, there are about 80 women, European women, in this mess. And we were the only European women in the whole of Kure Garrison, which was a huge garrison. And at times this could be presented a bit of a problem now and then. And we were warned about this when we arrived. A matron told us our hours of duty, which I think we went on duty at 7:30 in the morning again, and I think we came off at 8 o'clock at night, and we either were on duty till lunchtime at 1 and had the afternoon off, or we finished at 6:05 I think, and then we had the evening off, and we had one day off a week. We were told all these things, and that we were on active service. And because we were on active service, we would have to wear our khaki battle dress every time we left the mess to go out of the town or outside. We always had to be out in uniform. And if it was summer, to wear a khaki drill. On duty, we wore our ordinary indoor uniform. So we weren't allowed to wear any civilian clothes outside, unless we were going to the officers' club, which was halfway down the hill, and we were allowed to walk down there in summer dresses. She again mentioned that we would only be there for 18 months. She also explained that this was a Saturday we arrived, that we could have the day off to unpack, and that our heavy luggage would follow us, settle into our rooms, and we would go on duty the next day at 1 o'clock on Sunday, have the morning off. On Sundays, we either had a half-day morning off or a half-day afternoon. And that particular Sunday morning, there was a huge cocktail party to celebrate QA Day, which was really on the 27th of March. And this happened to be the 50th anniversary of the Golden Jubilee, 1952, when the foundation of the QAs, and we just arrived there for this enormous party. Much later, can I just add this? It goes on. Much later, I was actually took part in the Cenotaph Parade 50 years later to celebrate the 100th centenary in London. So I was very privileged to attend both. Going back to Japan, it was terribly muddling when we arrived, and Pat and I tried to unpack and that, and in the end we got fed up with it, and we thought, well, we'll go out, and we walked down to curate, to explore, because we were in Japan. We couldn't believe we were in Japan. I said, Pat, pinch me, I'm in Japan at long last. And so we traipsed down the hill in this hot khaki shirt, and it was very hot in March, and got down to, it was about a mile's walk down to the bottom of Curie, and it wasn't very prepossessing. We looked around a few shops and that, and then we went back and went to the officer's club, which was a bit better, and had a cup of tea. And then we had a phone call that night, because some of the boys we'd been out on the ship with, we were just friends with, had come to Japan with us, but they were being posted to Korea the next day. And so they wanted us to go to a dance, and didn't really feel like it at the officers' club that night. But because they were going to Korea and to the war, we did. And Pat and I went, and we, with about three of them, it was just very innocent. We just danced and to a Japanese band with a quaint rhythm at the officers' club, and then said goodbye to them. And they were flying off to Korea, I think, the next day. On the Sunday, we went to this enormous cocktail party, which was really swamping. There must have been several hundred people there, and we were at the top for us and everybody else, and felt a bit lost. And eventually, I think there'd been a service in the Garrison Church. I think we may have gone to that first. Anyway, we went on duty for the first time. To get to the hospital from the mess was a long walk to the back entrance. I think it was nearly a quarter of a mile over a sandy, gravelly road with fields, and it was very hilly where we were in Japan, almost mountainous. And the hospital had been a Japanese naval hospital before the war, or during the war, and taken over by the Allies. It was a large concern of separate buildings, and we had 1,000 beds, about roughly 1,000 beds there. And it was run, as I said, by a trio of British, Australians and Canadians. We had a British colonel in charge, Commandant Colonel Meneses, who was very good. We had three matrons, a British matron who was a senior matron, Colonel Widger, an Australian matron and a Canadian matron. So matron, when they did their weekly rounds, it was rather awe-inspiring, because not only had you one matron to cope with, you had three to follow around your ward. Anyway, I was posted to the, or sent to the officer's ward as a junior sister. This was, I think, in the main block. The hospital was divided into many different blocks. There was a huge main area, and then smaller blocks separated, probably in case of earthquakes. And one of the buildings was built on rollers. In case there was an earthquake, that was one of the tallest buildings. Later, I did experience earth tremors, so this was an interesting aspect of it. Anyway, I was very shy in those days. I was 24 and rather, I think we were all rather more innocent, and I walked into the, I've reported to the sister, the senior sister in the sister's office, then walked into the officer's ward, and one of them yelled out, look what's come from England, this pink jean, something or other. And anyway, it was a large ward with about 30 beds, polished floors. The beds had lockers, there were portable screens. The beds were almost full. Some of the patients were not too ill. Some of them were very poorly. They were very young. And one of the first ones I came to was a young lad who had lost his leg, had been amputated. He was about doing his national service. He was probably about 20. And the boy in the next bed whispered to me, you know, he's a very good rugby player at school. And this was the beginning of my introduction to gunshot wounds and the effects of war. It was a mixed ward because probably we had medical cases, but many surgical cases, many gunshot wounds, burns. They were very poorly, a lot of the patients, but their sense of humour and their bravery was incredible. And we used to play tricks on them too, the older trick of when they were being a bit naughty of putting some Andrew's liver salts in the urine bottle and giving it to them. But I was only a junior, the junior sister, and I'd been used to being in charge of a ward, and I found I was back to cleaning lockers and behaving myself very properly the first few weeks. But we worked very hard on that ward, and we used to get casualties coming in. They would be transported, either flown over from Korea to Iwakuni, where they'd be picked up by the ambulance train and brought in. And it was called coming in convoys. And we had several at a time. And they were always coated in white dust, these lads. And when I got to Korea myself, I suffered them. They were coated. There was white dust everywhere. And their hair would be matted and their clothes and that. And you would, you know, spend some time later sort of washing their hair and trying to make them comfortable. They're always very tired. They're always very pleased to get into a hospital bed. One of my tasks was to, the ones that were very poorly and badly wounded or ill, was to make egg flips. I learned to make egg flips for high protein diets, and I could make the eggs stand up on end in the end and get them feed them through straws or whatever it was. And I stayed on that ward for a long time, well, quite a long time. And we worked long hours, but it was very rewarding. And then eventually I went on night duty. We did our stint on night duty. Night duty was different. You were in charge of a couple of wards, or if not three wards. And it varied, and you went on for 2 weeks. And then you had five nights off, which was absolutely brilliant. Because with regard to leave, because we were on active service, we were only given 6-7 days rest and recuperation on our leave every 6 months, if we were lucky. So if you were on night duty, at least you'd have a break of five nights, and you could probably go away. Just trying to see. Yes, I went on night duty in April of that year, and then I had five nights off. And a wonderful thing happened then, because there were very few places we could go to, and we were restricted where we were allowed to go to. But in Osaka, no, it's Kobe, in Japan, there was a lady who had been in the QAs during the war, Second World War, had married a banker and was living in Kobe. And she wrote to the mess and said, if you have any tired QAs needing leave, would you please let them get in touch with me, because I've organised all the European ladies for their war effort, the Korean War effort, in the city of Kobe, to give a home for QAs on leave, or nurses on leave. And I went up to Kobe with two other QAs by train, leave train, to stay with Emma. And it's an absolutely wonderful break. We caught the leave train about midday from Kure Station. It was an old steam train full of smuts. Took a long time to get up to Kobe, about 6 hours, something like that. And then we were looked after. Emma couldn't put us up, but her friends could. And the friends had a beautiful house, large detached house, in the area, posh area of Kobe. They were actually away, but they'd left the house open to us with their servants. And we were given, I think I shared a room with one girl, and the major we went up with had her own room. At that time, I was plagued by mosquito bites and in absolute agony. And the first thing I had when I arrived at this house, I was given a proper Japanese bath and put into this hot tub of water, and it killed all the mosquito bites. It's absolute bliss. And we had 5 days there, and the Europeans were so good to us and took us all round and spoiled us, and we felt very rested when we got back.
I expect seeing the war wounded, you know, this must have been taken you quite a bit of effort to get used
it
to
did,
that.
It did, yes. And we were sort of battling with about three things. You felt heartbroken with these war wounded. I mean, there were many surgical wards there, and there was one 80-bedded ward, which I eventually looked after on night duty, full of other ex-war wounded, and they'd lost legs, they had burns, you name it. And the medical cases were bad too. They suffered from a lot of infected hepatitis, tuberculosis. We had an isolation block. But I think it was the wounded that were the saddest to see, and sometimes the wounds were dreadful and separating and very, very bad.
Did you get the feeling that they had been neglected? They'd been in the field with these wounds for a long time?
Not really, because I believe what happened was that if they were wounded, they were taken to a casualty clearing station in Korea, and then I heard that the Indian field ambulance were absolutely magnificent out there. And they were either taken down the line, either to, if they weren't too badly wounded, they were flown out to us, or if they were very poorly or near. There was an American hospital which I actually went to when I was in Seoul, and that had a helicopter landing pad, which I'd never seen before, and they were taken there and looked after. Also, there was the Danish equivalent of MASH out there, and they were very good. They were non-combatants, but they had a very good sort of casualty clearing station hospital out there. So I think they were pretty well looked after altogether and cared for. There's something I must remember, and I've forgotten what it is. I'm sorry, it's very important. See, I'll come back to it. I was nursing on many of the different wars there, and all the time, you were tired because, A, you were, I suppose, you felt very saddened by what you saw. B, the climate in Japan is not the easiest of climates. It was getting very hot. Then we went through the wet season, and we were walking backwards and forwards in hospitals and mess, etc. It seemed to walk everywhere, not that it mattered, but you got very tired. And Matron was right, you did get very weary a lot of the time. It was a combination of everything, I think. And also, we, apart from working very hard on duty and doing our best for these boys, we played very hard too. And not that we particularly wanted to, but there was a heavy social life going on because we were the only European women there. And as I gradually got used to being there, I got more involved. I was involved with the Green Room Club, and we used to put on productions and things later. And there were various things we sort of had to go to, social events and that. We had dances and things.
Is this the warning you had when you arrived? You were told that as there were so few women, it could be problematic.
Yes.
This social...
I think, yes,
duty.
And I think you had to really have your wits about you, because you could get caught up with... I mean, there were so many men out there, so many married men too, and one or two people fell by the roadside, or, you know... I mean, quite honestly, I loved every minute of it, but it could be very artificial if you had to keep your wits about you all the time. We were very young, really. Well, you know, compared with modern day women. One of the tasks I was asked to do, which I was delighted to do, actually. There were two Red Cross ladies there, and we had the garrison church was in the grounds, I think, of the hospital. It was St. Peter's Church, and it was a fairly modern, rather nice building. And the Red Cross ladies asked me if I would do the flowers in church, be responsible for the church flowers every 3 weeks or something, and
the
I did
choir,
that.
The choir.
No, the flowers, sorry.
The flowers.
The flowers, and the church flowers. And I did that sort of voluntary with a friend every 3 weeks until I think I went to Korea or something. And I used to like doing it. It was quite a long walk to do it. And we had our church services there. And another thing I forgot to mention was that in the grounds of the hospital, also in the grounds of our mess, a Japanese lady, a mama-san, would come with a huge barrow of fresh flowers all through the winter and that, and we could buy fresh flowers, beautiful flowers. And I should have said that was my first sight of Japan. I'd never seen anything like it, but it was one where we could buy these beautiful flowers and bowls and arrange them, and they're very artistic.
Were you able to gain any of the, is it Ikebana, the skills?
Yes, not really. I did learn to arrange a few flowers, and that was all, but not. But, and we used to, obviously, the sister's job was to do the flowers on the wart and things like that. As I became more experienced, I was in charge of ward. I was in charge, actually, they put me in charge of the officers' ward, which is amazing later on. I always seem to go back to the officers' ward. I don't know why. I didn't particularly want to be on there. Night duty, I was on the other wards. There was one session of night duty I did. I had three wards, I think, or two to look after, with about 60 patients or something like that. I was in charge. I had an RMC orderly look as well on each ward, and I used to have to dodge across the gardens in the dark to one ward to the other. And one night I went to take over from the day sister, and she said, be careful, Hall, because there's a snake around somewhere. So I don't know anything about Japanese snakes. My torch battery conked out, and I borrowed an oroscope, which is a tiny instrument with a tiny light in for looking into an ear, and I was going across with this. That was all right. Nobody saw this snake. And every night we went on duty, it grew bigger and bigger in the imagination. And that was the time I was on night duty. And I'd settled, I was on a medical ward. I was sitting on one ward and keeping an eye on the other. And I'd done a round of my patients about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the orderly was sitting at the desk writing up my notes or something, and I suddenly felt my chair doing this, and everything started to rattle, and we had quite a strong earth tremor, and my friend Cynthia was looking after the 80-bedded casualty ward, which is on top of this building on rollers, and she phoned me few minutes later. She said, you're right, Jill, because it'd been dreadful up here. And we had a strong earth tremor. And there'd been an earthquake in Kobe, and 7 people had been killed. And this was a tremor from that that had affected us. But we did have quite a number of them while I was there. But
what happened to the patients? Were there sort of precautions taken?
We weren't actually given any, as far as I remember, any earthquake report. I don't think there's anything you could do, really. Most of the wards were single-storied, but not all, apart from one or two. And there was this tall building. It was about four, because that had about 4 stories, and it had operating theatres underneath, and the casualty ward was more or less on top. It was a very big wall. But we were given typhoon warnings, and we had typhoon practices. And we had to carry an emergency dressing in the pockets of our uniform. It was field dressing that you could use. And we had pockets in our dresses, and we carried one in that when it was, we had these typhoon warnings. I'm afraid we didn't take them very seriously, but we should have done, really. But while I was there, we didn't actually experience that typhoon at all. But we did have several earth tremors when I was there.
These wounded boys that you were nursing,
yes.
Did you ever get cases of frostbite with them?
Yes, I did. I remember particularly one case of frostbite. It was Christmas 1952, and I was on night duty in charge of this big casualty ward, and I had about 70 patients to look after, with one, possibly two orderlies. It was very busy, again with gunshot wounds, fractures, you name it, all of them. And it was Christmas Eve, and I'd tucked all the patients up, and I was feeling slightly sorry for myself because I was on night duty for Christmas. And I was also feeling homesick, because homesick was another thing we used to, homesickness we suffered from. But I'd settled everybody up, and then there was a tap. I was sitting in the office for a few minutes, there was a tap on my door. Or just before, I heard a shuffling noise outside, and it was about midnight, I think. And I looked up and saw a patient who had frostbitten feet on crutches shuffling towards me. Now, I knew he should be in bed, and I was about to tick him off. Then I remembered it was Christmas Eve, and it'd be pretty mean to do that, you see. So I smiled and said, "You're all right." And he came in, and he was sandy-haired, and he blushed to the roots of his hair, and from his pyjama top, he pulled out a rather lurid-looking scarf. He said, "Happy Christmas, sister, this is for you." And I just wept, you know. So, and he had, he must have recovered, but we did have cases of frostbite, and I suppose sometimes they would have amputated toes and things like that. But that was the only one I really sort of came across, and I think he recovered probably all right. But
I expect you were getting an idea of what that war was like, weren't you?
Yes.
Did you get stories?
Yes, we did. And another thing, this is what I think is important to say, none of us really knew much about this war, which sounds awful going out there, but we didn't. There wasn't an awful lot about it on the news at home when we left. Probably our geography wasn't all that marvellous, but anyway, we didn't know, but we learnt fairly quickly about what was going on. Most of us were frustrated because we felt nobody at home knew what was going on. As I said, I used to write home in my letters when you could see these wounded people, if you knew what was happening, if people at home knew what was happening about it. And several of us asked the matron when we arrived and when we were there, why can't the QAs go over to Korea to nurse the wounded? And they said, no, you're not allowed to. The conditions are too rough. And it was a very long time after that I discovered, in 1999, I met a QA at this Thanksgiving service at St. Paul's, and she had been one of the first to go out when it was cobbled together in, I think it was June or July or somewhere, when the Korean War broke out. She was sent out with a field hospital with the RAMC to Korea for a very short time, and things were so bad there, and two of the RAMC officers were shot dead that they pulled them out. And this is in the very, very early days of the war. And we were not allowed to go, and we all got very frustrated about this because we felt we could do something. But anyway, this went on. This went on until October 1952, or September. And there's a rumour going around that the QAs are going to be allowed to go over to Korea.
Yes, before you go into Korea, Jill, if you would bear with me, I know you've been so patient.
No.
If I could ask you a little more. On the ward, you mentioned earlier in the UK you had these detention wards.
Yes.